Okay, it is 4:01, and today is Thursday, March 13th, 2025, and I'd like to bring the Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. Item one, roll call. Fred Ariza. He's here. I see him.
Here.
Okay.
There he is. There he is.
Holly, I don't see.
She texts me. She does have a family emergency. She's going to try to be on if she gets to a computer or gets to a quiet place.
Okay, great. Doug Jennings,
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter,
Here.
Susanna Shippers.
Here.
Ryan Thomas is absent and Chris Yarder present. So,
You didn't call me.
oh, I see you, Mark. I'm sorry.
Margo Garcia.
Marco
That's a
Garcia is here too. I'm jumping ahead. All right. Well, item two is the polymer plant presentation. And so you guys,
And
you're from
Paul.
Republic.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Paul, I have it up if you want me to share it. You just let me know.
If it's easy for you to do it, there's a video. So if you know how to make sure the video runs, that would be great. So because sometimes sharing and video may not work all that great. All right.
She can do everything.
I
I
wouldn't say
listen.
that.
All right. I see it. I hope everybody else sees it. First and foremost, want to thank everybody here to allow us to present on what we think is a really interesting and exciting move for Republic Services into this particular market of plastic circularity. Today, we'll be talking about the introduction of our polymer centers into the United States and what we do there and what is the product and why we're doing it. First, I'll start off with, my name is Paul Zaman. I'm the general manager here for the local business unit for Republic Services. I've been here in Tucson with Republic for 5.5 years. But before then, I've been in Tucson since graduating. I came to U of A in 94, and I've been here locally all for about 6 years. I find myself moving back to Tucson multiple times. I love it here. I think I'm here to stay. Also on the call, we have our director of materials marketing and recycling, Joe Riconosciuto, and then also our local operations manager here at our recycling facility, Danya Velasco. Just want to have them here in case we have some questions, about the process, and even the facility here locally. We can answer some of those questions for you at the end of the presentation. So if you want to move to the next one, Brittany. So a little bit about Republic in case anybody is unfamiliar. Republic, 42,000 employees nationwide. We have about 1,000 locations in North America. From in terms of waste and recycling pickups, whether it's residential, commercial, industrial, we do about 5 million services a day. Here in Arizona, what's special about us, I think, here in Arizona is that we're headquartered here up in Phoenix. So we have a little over 2,000 total employees in Arizona. So while we're a large company for Tucson, and I would say this for Tucson and all of Arizona, we're still a local company, if you can call us that, here in Arizona. The local business unit here has a little under 200 employees. And we operate, of course, the hauling, of waste and recyclable material. But we also operate the largest single stream recycling facility here in Southern Arizona. Just from a larger company perspective, you can see some of the numbers here. Nationwide, 75 recycling centers. But what's important is, for us, is these four polymer centers, of which two of them are operational at this point in time, one in Las Vegas, one in Indianapolis. And this is an area of the company is really focused on growing over the next several years. Go ahead, Brittany. So why plastics? Why is this a focus of the company? The big focus here is kind of this idea of circularity, right? The company wants to get into a kind of a responsible environmental outlook on taking recyclable material and recycling it as many times as possible. With plastics, unfortunately, a lot of the material, as it gets separated at the recycling facility and gets moved into the market at large, that product that's produced ends up in a lot of what we might call downcycled products that really don't have a lot to offer in terms of continuous recycling. This would be like carpet, construction pipe, park benches. And then, so what Republic said was, hey, can we do something to take that material and instead of having it end its life cycle in these products, can we move that into more of a circular where it's continuously recycled over and over again? And then what materials are those? So the focus here is on PET, water bottles, which everybody has had a drink from one, I'm sure. HDPE, it'd be like a laundry detergent bottle, whether it's natural, which is usually white, or it's some type of a color, right? And then polypropylene, I think we find these in like they're rigid, they're in toys, in those types of things. Okay. So we're going to focus on those. And because we know that there's a market and there's an ability to recycle these further and continue to recycle these products. Go ahead, Brittany. Oh, there we go. So, this is kind of just a little bit of an idea of what that current before these polymer centers plastics process look like, right? It's very linear, right? The manufacturer produces the product. Consumer, we all here, we use it. We put it into hopefully even into the recycling bin, right? It's collected, it's brought to the recycling facility, separated out, but then it's sent back out to manufacturers, and then it gets downcycled. The vast majority of that volume is downcycled, put into to product that can no longer be recycled. Go ahead, next, Brittany. Here's a little bit of picture so you guys get an idea of the volume we're talking about, right? And so, these are the rigid plastics, the ones, the twos, the fives. Roughly 6 million tons are produced a year, of which about 2.7, maybe a little less than half, are collected. Out of that collected amount, these are the curbside recycling bins, corporations that deliver different recycled material to us. About 2.2 million of that, 2.7 are recovered. It's not ever 100%. It might be size of the material. It may be stuff that's kind of caked onto the material, is unable to be pushed through the process, but a pretty decent amount is recovered. Of that 2 million, about 85% of it today goes to what we would call downcycled products. They're going to end their life as that product. And only about 15% or 0.3 million tons can get it gets put back into this circular and sustainable kind of idea of the process. Go ahead, next, Brittany. So here's the one of the reasons why we know that there's a market for this, and this is a big push for us to produce this recycled material, not let it be downcycled. Right, here's a number of companies we're listing here that have publicly committed to certain percentages of recycled content in their material. I'm going to focus on Coca-Cola. We have, and it's public knowledge, we have entered into an agreement with Coca-Cola to receive our PET flake, which is water bottles. We directly send them this flake, and we'll talk about what that looks like and how we get to that flake, and which Coca-Cola now takes and is able to remake and put back into their plastic bottles. So if not for anybody else, this just Coca-Cola to the consumer, to us, to Coca-Cola, to the consumer, to us, to Coca-Cola. That is our entire plan for this type of product. All right. Go ahead next, Brittany. A little idea. Doug knows this facility well. This is our recycling center here in town. We're located right off the corner of Ajo and Alvernon Way. And these are just some pictures of kind of what we look like here. That number two picture, that's just what our tip floor looks like. You can see one of our trucks delivering recyclable material. That bulldozer is going to load it up into the machine. That's the start of the process. Picture three, that's our baler. So once the plastics are separated out and we push that line into this baling machine, it compacts it. It makes these big cubes. It wraps some baling wire around them, and those are ready to ship. And that's what picture four looks like. Those are just stacked bales of plastic. All right. And then you can see once we do that, it goes to, that's okay, Brittany, it goes to the polymer center. All of our material here locally will go to the Las Vegas Polymer Center for its next step in the circularity of this plastic, of these plastic products. Okay. Now you can see at the top of this slide, there's that linear kind of chart, graph, what have you, of what it kind of looked like before the Polymer Center introduction, right? Production down to a downcycled material. And the entire intent of the Polymer Center now is instead of going from collection to the manufacturer, it could be any manufacturer buying that and then downcycling it at 85% kind of clip, right? It's now going to the Polymer Center. The Polymer Center will separate it between the PET and then the HDPE and polypropylene. And then the Polymer Center itself will make and create the PET flake by shredding it, and then it'll ship that off to the manufacturer, in this case for us, mainly Coca-Cola. Then what's going to happen with that HDP and PPE, that's sorted by color, it is sent now to a different type of polymer center. It's called a blue polymer center. We were happy to kind of announce that one of the larger blue polymer centers is being built right now with a end of 2025 start date. We'll get to a slide of this up in Buckeye, Arizona. So we're bringing it back into the state to continue manufacturing the blue polymers, which are the HDP and polypropylene, but they kind of get manufactured in much the same way, and there's a different use for them, but they can be returned to the recycling process. Go ahead, Brittany. So here, hopefully this works. So here's a little video. I hope everybody can hear it and see it. It's kind of a little, it's a video of just what the Polymer Center looks like, some highlights and information around it. Go ahead, Brittany. No sound. Is anybody hearing sound?
No.
No. Well, that's okay. It's just going to be music. So if you just watch, it's kind of just a little bit of a introduction of the Polymer Center. Olefins are the blue polymers. Those are the HDP and the polypropylene. All right, great. Sorry about the sound, but I think it gave you a little bit of a good idea of what that's doing, what Republic's kind of investment in it is going to be. This is, you know, one of our key values or key tenets of the committee is environmental responsibility. And this just kind of moves that value forward. Go ahead, Brittany. Let's move to the next slide. So Polymer Center, here's the process. You can see in item number one, that's where the product comes from, our recycling center here locally. So, you know, we hear a lot from the community about, hey, how do we know what we're recycling? Where does it go? How do we know it's actually being recycled? So here's one way we can answer that question. Our facility here in town, those plastics are 100% going to the Polymer Center in Las Vegas. And that's that step number one. Step number two, the Polymer Center will separate between the PET and the HDPE and polypropylene. Once that's separated, if you go to the number three in the process, this part of the process is only for the PET. It'll be shredded and grinded into that flake. It'll be washed. Think of it like an agitator washing machine. It gets a lot of the paper off. It gets a lot of whatever's left on that float. It's a water machine. The due to its density, the flake will sink to the bottom. And then the caps of the water bottles, basically, will float. So that's where they separate those two, because we want the flake, we want that clear flake, and we want to be able to, and the cap, colored cap flake, can still be processed for additional caps. So when we get to the product at the end, you can see the bottom is what the Polymer Center produces. The PET flake and the cap and ring flake, and then it's going to ship that HDP polypropylene to the Blue Polymer Center. Go ahead, Brittany. Blue Polymer Center, much like the PET, it gets sorted. There's a shredding and grinding piece to it. It has a little extra step. It's not just ground down. There's a resin it gets mixed with. It gets made into these pellets. Best I can say is think of if you have one of those pellet grills. It's what it looks like. They're plastic pellets. And those can be designed to manufacture kind of specifications and just be made into the same type of bottle. If it was a detergent bottle or something like that, we have the ability to say, hey, they want green bottles. We can mix the colors that we bring in and create that color for them. And then it will continue in the cycle of circularity as far as, you know, as long as it continues to be recycled, you know, by the community. Next slide. Just a kind of an idea of I talked a little bit about the Blue Polymer Center here in Arizona, going to be opening in late 2025. A real significant investment from the company. Go ahead. Idea of where they're at currently in the United States. You can see the Polymer Centers in Indianapolis and Las Vegas, those red stars, the Blue Polymer Centers scheduled right now in Phoenix and then in Indianapolis as well. All right, next. Oh, that was it. That was great. I forgot the Q&A slide. So what we'd like to do, hopefully everybody kind of enjoys and appreciates that really the point of this, and I can't say it enough, is to take a product that 85% of was going to other products that just stopped in the recycle process, life cycle. Now what we're trying to do is take those materials and try and resend them through the recycling process as many times as possible. This gets us away from, you know, oil-based, petroleum-based usage. And it gives an idea and a sense, hopefully, to the community that they know where the product is going. For us, I'll tell you right now, at this our facility here, if we can separate it out, it's never going to the trash. We've heard it. We've heard some people question whether or not it actually goes out into the recycling markets. 100% does. When I say 100% does, 100% of what we're able to bail and separate out, we get out to the markets. And they're remade into other products. We're just trying to have that happen as many times as possible with plastics. So that being said, we'd love to take a couple of questions if there are any questions. Like I said, we have a couple of experts here for our local recycling facility, as well as kind of our corporate recycling team. So please, whoever would like to ask questions. And that's, is it Margo?
Yes, very good. Thank you.
I see the hand.
This is so exciting. I can't tell you how excited I am to hear about your story. And I first read about this going on when Circular Arizona in there, I look at their monthly newsletter, and there was the information there. So I'm very excited about it. I had a couple of questions. I'm kind of a technical nerd. When you do the delabeling and that step early, do you put it into water? What do you do to take the labels off?
I'll go ahead and grab that one, Paul. It goes through a machine that is rather untechnically called the delabeler. it's essentially a cylinder with a bunch of very, very small blades inside of it. Okay. And you're not trying to slice the bottles open. You're just trying to create a little abrasion, and then the bottles rub against each other, and that successfully removes most of the labels. The goal of that, though, to be clear, is as much as anything, is the primary technology is optical scanning, and more and more bottles today have a full label covering them. Right, those big heat shrink labels, and our machinery just literally can't see the bottle underneath it, right? And so the delabeler is less about getting the label out than it is about presenting some surface area for the machinery to say, oh, okay, I know what that is, and then correctly categorize it so that you don't lose that yield.
Okay, the next one I had was. I noticed that you had running some of the belts like we see at our MRF, and there seemed to be hand sorting still there. Can you sort of, you said you have optical sorting. I know that isn't always, as we said, can be confounded by a whole number of things, including the labels and the weight per volume or per surface area and so forth. Why are you doing the hand sorting still?
Yeah, so relatively speaking, there's very little of it. The hand sorting is at two places in the process. If you think of the traditional sortation that would happen in an older plant, the people are really doing a lot of the work of sorting the material. At the Polymer Center, they're doing two things. One, at the very beginning of the process, it's basically asset protection. Their safety, their eyes, looking for something that doesn't belong. So they're not actively removing much product. They're just there to prevent something a mistake that might've happened upstream from causing problems and really gumming up the works. And then we have at the very, very end of the system that the products, you know, when you're aiming for circularity, we have to have respect that our customers, a lot of them, are regulated by the FDA, right? I mean, these are sensitive products that we're hoping to have remade, and the tolerances are very, very tight. So again, it's more kind of quality control, quality assurance than it is sortation per se.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed the barrels.
It's parts per million. Right, is what we're going for. And so tiny little mistake can be amplified. So it's just, again, it's last line of defense.
So, you know, we talk about the dead cats and the various things. I'm sure they're gone by the time it gets to you there. But I know from other plants that I visited that pieces of metal can stick in, even the baling. I'm not sure what, if you're using wire baling, that could get in.
So the very first step is mechanical dewiring. Then it goes through a couple of magnets before we attempt any optical sortation. And we really want to get anything that's recoverable One of the things that makes this process special is that to some degree, it's less specialized than the traditional recycling processes, and so we can cure for some, again, mistakes. Hopefully not the dead cats. Hopefully something like that egregious isn't finding its way through. But you may find a few aluminum cans. We'll still capture them and recycle them, right? We don't treat that as a contaminant or something that's a problem. We say, okay, fine, we'll recycle it here instead of back in Tucson.
Okay. And let's see. Okay, well, I guess you added that. In the optical recycle and the optical, can you talk a little bit more? I mean, are you also using wind at all? Or are you really using, could you just maybe explain a little more? Are you tumbling and then blowing, or how are you?
Yeah, yes, all of that. At the secondary location at the polymer center, the material arrives already baled. So the first thing is really liberating those bales, because plastic can sometimes kind of want to weld one bottle onto a cup or something like that. And so we put a lot of the first steps in the process are just opening it back up, tumbling it, and in so doing, we create opportunities to pull out, little bits of fine shredded paper or something like that that may have been in there. And yes, we are using wind.
To do.
And everything that comes out gets looked at least one more time, so that before it finds its way to a compactor, we say, let's just make sure we're not throwing out the baby with the bathwater, and we have the ability to reintroduce any material that is indeed recoverable.
I must say those flakes look just beautiful, at least the picture of them. They're so clear and they're looking very clean. In the drying cycle, do you blow them and dry them, or what method are you using for drying?
Yeah, so we try to be really sensitive about water use. So it's not a perfectly closed system. We do consume some water, but we do a combination of spin drying, friction drying, and then ultimately the last step is heat.
Okay. And what is your water consumption per, I don't know, pound of flake, or I don't know how you measure it.
Yeah, I have to look that up too. I don't want to misquote. That's a stat I could have told you a year ago, but there's not a lot of people with your attention to detail, so I don't have it off the top of
I'm
my head
sorry. I told you I was a technical nerd.
anymore.
Well,
But
I want to get a question in and front of
okay.
Margo here.
Right.
So you've been accepting the material up there since what, July of last year?
July.
I
For
take
the Tucson,
that
yeah, for the Tucson facility, it was July.
It seems like the prices are relatively strong. You foresee that happening moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak on pricing. There's they're commodities, right? The same as anything else, and so they're subject to these big geopolitical drivers. This drive for circularity is the big pull. So Paul mentioned HDPE natural. Most of that is milk jugs, and you can see that's a product which can be made fully circular, can be made into packaging today. Other polyethylene, so detergent bottles, paint cans, you name it, the rest of that stuff is traditionally all downcycled, and the reflection in the market price between the two is extraordinary, right? So we're seeing the market forces really pull apart things which can be made circular from those which cannot. We see the polymer center as an opportunity to keep that top end, but lift the bottom a little bit, right? We can breathe some life into some of these more challenging products by segregating them more specifically.
Okay. And where's the is the facility at capacity or 70%? How's it doing out there?
Yeah, I would say probably 70, 80%. It's a 24/7 operation, so you can imagine. Just from
A
a
lot of
personnel
material, huh?
training skill set, it takes some time to build that up across four shifts of employees.
Gotcha. Okay. Hey, Danya. Thank you.
No problem.
I also had one quick question. How are you all looking at or mitigating microplastics through the process?
Yeah, I mean, there's very little generated in the process. There's fine material that, so those PET flakes, anytime you intentionally reduce the size of material, it's brittle, you'll get some smaller pieces. We're capturing them. And those are going into a secondary use application, something lower value, something more like what it traditionally would have all gone into. But we can still get our arms around it. In terms of discharge, we've got, I think it's sub-micron filtration. So it's captured and contained.
Okay, great. Just wondering. Thank you.
No problem.
Do you have air quality permits as well as water permits? What kind of permitting do you needed for this facility?
Yeah, think of it like a MRF, right? It's not, there's no emissions. Okay. from the process. I don't remember exactly what we got. It's jurisdiction specific. I can tell you that Indianapolis had different rules than Las Vegas for the exact same process.
Sure. Okay. I just wondering with the microplastics that would be in the air when the people are working there. Is that a concern at all? Do they wear respirators? I didn't see any on them.
No, they're not required.
Okay.
Cause we're not, there's no, noxious processes. The only heat is drying. Mm-hmm. And it's very contained. And as far as water, we're able to treat it to the point where it's a POTW discharge.
Okay.
So it's clean. And the Las Vegas water treatment facility is literally our next door neighbor.
Okay.
Doesn't have a long journey.
Right. Well, they have a lot of concern about water in Las Vegas, so I'm sure they were very concerned about your water usage overall.
Yeah, the city does, I'll give them credit, they do a remarkable job at water management.
Mm-hmm. They do. Yeah. Well, this is wonderful. And
yeah, any other questions?
This is great. Is Buckeye going to be doing the similar operation as Vegas then?
No. So Buckeye is downstream of the Las Vegas. It's sort of the final step. Those pellets that Paul had on that slide,
yeah,
are a direct drop-in substitute for what an Exxon or a Dow Chemical or somebody would produce. So that it's a one-for-one drop-in solution for packaging converters or anybody
else.
So
what is Buckeye going to, they're going to produce a plastic or they're going to?
They're going to produce the finished product out of Buckeye is pellets. So,
and then you market those to different consumers.
Yeah. So buyers.
So it's a processing, taking the raw material from Vegas and then processing it down to a sellable pellet.
Yeah. So keep the, yeah. I mean, the kind of, if you're a brand owner and you want to make bottles, you purchase your bottles from a company that their function is buying pellets, putting them into a mold and blowing them into shape.
Right, right.
The Blue Polymers plant in Buckeye will be able to sell directly into that process.
Gotcha.
With no other
intermediaries. Gotcha. Thanks.
Are they only bottles? Or I thought when I read the material, it sounded like there was also other kind of packaging, like the packages that meat comes in or that vegetables were put into, or.
So yeah, we use bottles as shorthand, and that's probably lazy, but anything basically that would hold its shape if you fill it with water. So rigid plastic packaging, so yogurt cups, or, you know, tubs to go, you go to Starbucks or McDonald's and you get a drive-through cup, various sizes and shapes of common, deodorant sticks. I mean, all different kinds of things. And it's not that 100% of it will be sold back into packaging. It's just that which can be, right? We want to be as intentional about that as possible. And most of it can be if you sort it thoroughly enough. So I'll give you one kind of parting example. We make, historically, we and everybody else in the industry makes a HDPE natural, and then we make an HDPE everything else. And that everything else can only be made into black, low value products. If we split the color fragment, the fraction of it into a white, a red, orange, and a yellow, and kind of a blues and greens, it creates pathways for those materials for applications that what we always use as an example, and this isn't disclosing a commercial relationship, but everybody knows Tide detergent is orange, right? So historically Tide would purchase clear pellets, put a whole bunch of orange colorant into them, and then when it's recycled, they can't get their own material back, right? That orange gets lost into a black product. And so they have to repeat the process of buying more clear material and more colorant. If we can capture the material that's already orange, it creates a huge efficiency for all parties.
So are they buying that?
We have disclosed a commercial relationship with Coca-Cola.
That's it. Okay. Got it. I'll be quiet.
Onward.
So I don't see any other hands raised. So if there aren't any other questions, kind of love to finish up here. You know, kind of thanked you already, but we really do appreciate any time we can be of help in terms of information around our facility or even what the company is doing. The company is constantly looking for an ability to invest smartly, but in into the right solutions, especially when it comes to sustainability and environmental solutions. And that's seen throughout a number of items we work with in the company. I'm sure a lot of you, Margo, I know you visit anybody, you know, I know we host groups from the city from time to time. Yep. Love to, now that I see some faces, if you guys show up, I'd love to be there and say hi to everybody. But thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. And maybe we'll get a field trip to Buckeye sometime.
Listen, let us say this. Not that I'm not sure that we could put it on our dime, but if you guys would be interested in something like that, we can make something like that happen. If you want to take a trip to Vegas, I'm always ready. we could do a Vegas tour. We would be absolutely pleased to host something like that if it is something that this group would be interested in doing.
Yeah.
Okay. We want the citizens of Tucson to have confidence, right? We want, there's too many news stories questioning the efficacy of these programs and whether they're honest and whether they're worth it. And we think this is something that's transparent, and it's exactly what the residents want to believe is happening when they put something in, when they take the time
and effort. Sure. It's really exciting. Thank you.
Yes.
Good presentation. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Thanks. Doug, it's good to see you.
You too.
And we're good at spreading the word and arguing with people. So
that's right.
Great. Great. Thanks. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. This is great. Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's take them up on Vegas. Let's go.
No, I don't know.
I was saying like, yeah, we could hit Buckeye, swing by Buckeye on the way to Vegas, loop around to San Diego, and then we'll come back.
Wow.
Sounds like a good trip, huh?
Maybe we'll talk to Carlos about that.
Well, thanks.
Thanks for arranging that.
Yeah.
Who did that, Brittany?
Yeah.
Well, you guys asked for it, and Christina reached out, so it was a combined effort, and you guys thought of it, so.
Super. Perfect.
That was great. Yes, very good.
Yeah, I think the first time I heard about it, Trevor, you mentioned it one time, too, in one of our meetings and stuff, so, yeah, that's great. Okay, well, this isn't exciting. Item three for the chairman's report. So I got bogged down. Sorry, I'm going to get back to it. What I'd like to do is, the first document that Brittany sent you has a lot of different language that I'd like to do to update all the old, the old report style. So I'm going to go back and incorporate that with the stuff that Brittany just recently sent you. Okay. And then I'm going to finish up with the full ESAC. So just too many meetings this week. PTSD and elections and just too much going on. So I'll try to get that out to Brittany early next week. So and also I wanted to bring up something real quick, which really it popped up for me last night. So the new agenda for mayor and council. That's going to be on next week includes a study session where I don't know if you remember, but I was talking to the city manager a lot about getting rid of that automatic 8 years and you're kicked off whatever BCC you're on. And I wasn't just doing it for me, so I don't want you guys to think it was just all about me, but I know other people on other BCCs, Parks and Rec and stuff like that, that have been kicked off at 8 years. I know Margo, you've been a victim of that where you're supposed to go away for a year. So, well, we were sneaky last time, but anyhow, so the city manager has set aside time for discussing removing the 8-year cap on the ESAC membership. So I didn't realize that ESAC was going to be the one that starts it. And so I was kind of panicking about what I should do or whatever. But I did find out that Carlos is going to be there at the study session. And also to the regular mayor and council meeting. And so it hopefully they'll say, yes, let's get rid of this archaic rule and move on. And they'll vote yay during the consent agenda. So I just wanted to give you guys a heads up if you want to go and jump in and listen to the study session or tune in later to the mayor and council meeting. You might be interested. So
Also,
I was thinking about going to maybe going to the mayor and council meeting just as support. So
it'd be really good to call your council member if you're from a particular ward and tell them to be sure that they vote for it.
oh, yes. Well, I'm in touch with
Well,
Karen too. Yeah.
but we should do, if we have a council member we get in touch with to tell them about it.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. Good idea. All right. So, that's just my stuff. Let's go on. So Carlos isn't here. So is some Frank, are you going to fill in for the gas to energy update or
Yes,
one of
absolutely.
these? Okay, I figured it would be you. So good to see you again.
Like again.
So
A little PowerPoint that I put together. It's not too long, just so that I can keep me on track.
And I was going to ask you, since I go back through all the meetings and everything for when I write up the final report, do you think ESAC could have like a little library through Brittany or something with your PowerPoints that we could refer back to?
I am supposed to keep everything that's presented. It is supposed to be a permanent record stored in one place. So Frank, if you want to send that over when you're done with it, that will be great.
Sure. Yeah, because you guys put a lot of work into putting these PowerPoints together. So I often go back and refer to the information in them.
All good to go?
Yep.
So I am talking today about the natural gas to energy project that you've been working on.
Yep.
So just to give you an idea, here's the map of our facility. And the current natural gas blower flare system is over here in this little area on the bottom left of your screen. And so the proposed landfill gas to energy system would essentially be in this location. This is the existing blower flare station. We don't know yet how much space they would need, but if they need more than this and they can expand, was just north of this location is the compost facility. So we can always adjust that or even move the compost facility within the whole site if you need. Just to give you a little summary of what we've done and where the project stands at this time. So the landfill gas recovery and utilization feasibility study was done by GHD in December of 2021. So what they looked at, and they came up with three alternatives. Alternative A would be if we upgrade the landfill gas system, the pipeline quality RNG, renewable natural gas, and then inject it into one of the pipelines, the regional pipelines, which could be Kinder Morgan or Southwest Gas. Alternative B that they looked at was upgrading the landfill gas so that we can fuel to create CNG and fuel our refuse and our buses. And then the third alternative C was to upgrade the landfill gas to generate power. So we could either use it on site if we have enough power needs here, or possibly putting in the grid so that TEP could then utilize it in the distribution throughout the city. So we provided all the information. They basically did the feasibility study based on how much landfill gas we generate and how much refuse comes in. And then also doing a model to see how much landfill gas we're going to be generating for years to come. Part of what came out of the study was that we should increase our generation of landfill gas up to 2,400 standard cubic feet per minute. In previous to 2019, we were generating 1,400. SCFMs. We're currently only generating about 900 SCFMs. So there's opportunity there to reach that 2,400 SCFM target. So what their recommendation was for the city to go with alternative A was to upgrade the landfill gas, generate RNG, and then inject it into one of the pipelines. So we prepared a request for proposal to obtain potential partners or developers to come in and assist us with this. So The alternative A and the reason why GHT recommended that was because the potential generating of selling the renewable natural gas and also selling environmental attributes that would be associated with those, which are called RINs, renewable index numbers. And so RINs have a value. Those can be sold to large corporations, large companies that buy these RINs to meet their emission standards and limitations. So, but they're doing this process. We still have the option of doing on-site CNG filling station or generating electricity, of course. Generating electricity, there are no environmental attributes that we can take advantage of. So it would just be recovering or selling the power or using it on site. So there wouldn't be any additional revenue opportunities there. If we do a CNG filling station on site, then RINs could potentially still be available if we're using that in the transportation industry. So the RFQ went out in 2022. It was a two-part process that we did. So in phase one, we basically put out the scope of work, primarily that we wanted to develop this RNG project process, but we kind of left it open as well. We wanted to see what other options we could receive. And so 9 respondents provided their solutions and their proposals. And they provided their technical and financial qualifications. That was just for the phase one process. It wasn't too time consuming for them, but they did need to provide what benefits the city would take advantage of. So as part of it, they needed to consider economic, social, and fiscal impacts, technology options, the costs of the systems, any regulatory requirements, and also greenhouse gas effects. After that, for phase two, 3 firms were selected from the 9 to continue in the process. And so then at that point, they were given time to submit the business plan, which was a project description in full detail and a financial plan. As part of that phase two, these firms were interviewed. There was a whole group of city staff, including the city attorney. So there's several people within the city that participated in the interviews and the whole review process. Once we finished the interviews, then these firms were ranked. And at that point, then we can start the process to do the negotiation and try to reach a contract agreement. We're still in the procurement process, so I'm kind of talking in general terms because it's still confidential. I can't disclose who applied or who submitted proposals or who were in the top 3 or who we're negotiating with right now. But we are negotiating currently with a firm, and hopefully we can reach some resolution so that we can establish a contract and move forward. Does anyone have any questions on or want a little more detail?
What is the timeline for this negotiating the contract?
And so that is that's a very good question. And it's very hard to even try to pinpoint how long it's going to take. What we're looking at right now, because our gas collection system, we're not at 2,400 SCFMs. And so we need to ensure, because part of the part of whatever contract or agreement the city develops, we will be responsible to ensure that we can supply the 2,400 SCFMs. And so because we're at 900 currently with the potential, which we know we can reach 1,400 because that's where we were at for many years prior to 2019, is that we have to look, and we're already in that process separately from this whole system. We are evaluating our gas collection system so that we can make improvements and where we need to make improvements. We know that we need to possibly add more extraction wells, possibly expand our header system. We know that we have cells 4A and 4B that we are filling in. Cell 4A, we're about to have three new wells so that we can come into compliance. It's already been 5 years since we started filling in that 4A cell. And so in 5 years, we need to ensure that we have, that we're extracting natural gas from that cell.
Well, is that in your operating plan?
That's not in the operating plan. It's in the air permit.
So how is the current collection system? The header lines, are they watered in at all? Are you collecting a lot of condensate? Or are they just kind of, I mean, you're not running the flare, are you?
We are. The flare runs 24/7.
Okay, so you're flaring off. So you got a little bit of vacuum on the
well. So we do. We have pretty much the same vacuum. It's a little less than when we were actually pushing landfill gas to TEP, which is why our flows are lower, around 900 instead of 1,400. But we've had some.
You were up to 1,400 in the heyday, huh?
Yes, correct.
And that's been 7, 8 years ago?
Yeah. Yes, that was 2019.
Okay.
About 6 years ago.
I have one more question on the quality of the gas. Is it at a quality where you can sell it back to TEP or make CNG out of it?
So it is at a quality that we can generate CNG or RNG. Of course, each well, and we haven't been optimizing our system since basically we stopped delivering gas to TEP.
You've just been kind of controlling the odors with venting off and flaring
as much. Well, we've been maintaining compliance.
Yeah, gotcha.
Right. And so we haven't been optimizing to get the maximum methane. So the methane quantity should be around 50% so that we can actually move forward and generate RNG. Or clean it up to send it to TP, or clean it up to do on-site CNG or anything like that.
If Frank, remind me how long it's been since you stopped piping to TEP. I remember when
I said it was in 2019.
Oh, okay. 2019 is when you stopped. Okay.
Right. At the end of 2019.
Good information, Frank. Thank you.
Okay. And just a little bit more on the gas collection system. I just want to say that because we do have to do the upgrades. We know that we have that generation and that we can, but we need to ensure before we can continue with the process. So as Margot asked, how long is it going to take? It's very hard to pinpoint, but what we are, our plan is to move forward and start ranking, picking up that flow so that we can get to the 2,400. And so that's going to include adding additional wells and then shutting some down and increasing the flows and the ones that produce high quality gas. Those are all issues that we have to address before we commit the city with a developer before they actually spend the money to build the facility, because we're looking at up in the $40 million range to build that kind of facility.
What happens if you can't up it?
Well, then if we can't up it and the developer cannot work with what we have, then we won't have an agreement. We'd have to find a different solution. And there are other solutions that we can, that we could probably just generate electricity if we just decided to do that. But we have to ensure that we have, that we can deliver on what we are proposing to offer the developer.
So why was the number 2,400 picked when it seems to be higher than what you've done so before?
Because that was part of the study that was done, the feasibility study.
The first phase?
Yes. It wasn't even the first phase of the procurement process. That was what we did back in 2021 with GHD. And then before that, we also worked with Cornerstone Tetra Tech that also ran the models. And so the models, based on how much refuge is in the landfill, show that we're supposed to be generating at least that amount, if not higher. But how do we extract it from the landfill so that we can actually have that flow and have it high quality? The models show that we are generating and developing that gas, but we haven't actively been extracting for the purpose of developing this system and this process. We've only been extracting so that we maintain compliance.
So what kind of investment are we looking at to bring the system up to do 2,400?
And that, again, we don't know exactly. We're engaged with one of our consultants, and they are evaluating the system, and they will also redesign our entire gas collection control system. And at that point, we're going to know how many new gas wells we need to put in, how many to repair, and then all of that is going to come with estimates. But we are talking about several, not a whole lot of millions, but at least maybe $2.5-3 million. And that's just an estimate that I don't know exactly. I couldn't at this point give you an exact number.
Mm-hmm. Not 100,000 and not 100 million, but someplace in between. Okay. Have TEP and Southwest Gas shown interest in buying the stuff?
In buying
the gas. Southwest Gas wanted the, or Kinder Morgan wanted the gas.
Because they're the original pipelines, is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay. Well, Southwest Gas has indicated that they will accept our RNG. They have a few steps that they have to go through. They have to obtain approvals from the ACC before they can actually accept it, but they are willing to work with the developer to get to that point. Kinder Morgan has indicated that they cannot accept our gas. And they, because we have groundwater contamination, they believe that we are a hazardous waste landfill. And so we're not. But they pretty much have decided that they will not accept any of our renewable natural gas injection. So we continue that path of basically going to be Southwest Gas possible. As far as from power generation, we have not been in contact or in any kind of discussions with TEP. But we were in the past generating delivering lab gas, and they were generating power. But there was a different system that they had, which is why they had decided back then that they didn't want our lab gas.
Thank you. That was good information. You know, we've been wondering about that for a while.
Good info. Thank you.
Yeah. Frank. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
As soon as we have more on the discussions and the negotiations, we'll definitely share that. But it's still a confidential process, and so there's only so much that I can say.
Cool. I just got to live long enough to see this, right? Do we all? hope it's sooner. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Are we getting a financial monthly report today or not? There you are. And my dogs are barking because TEP is outside getting our electricity back on, so I'll shut them up.
Am I able to share now? Can you hear me? Okay, I see it here.
Maggie, we can't really hear you. I don't know if it's...
Okay, is this better?
Much better.
Yes. Good, okay. I got a new computer a couple, 3 days ago, so I'm still working out the bugs. I was a little worried. Okay, so can I share my screen now, Brittany?
Yes, you're a co-host.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, let's... All right, let's try. Okay, how does that look? I'm gonna make this go. Okay.
Bigger.
Good, make it bigger?
Yeah, please.
Okay. See, I don't know. Make this bigger. Give me a sec. Oh, maybe that. Yeah, there. How's that, Margo?
Much better, thank you.
Okay.
And I may have to step away for a second. Okay, so
sure.
Be
sure.
Back.
So okay, that's expenditures.
So, our adopted budget for expenditures for the enterprise fund for the ES funds. Is $71.8 million for this year. And our actual so far, 39.8. And I think we'll be around 70.2. For that was the forecast I did in January. I'm going to do a new forecast for the third quarter. So when we meet in April, I'll likely have the new forecast numbers. So we'll see how we're doing because we are receiving a lot of the vehicles, the heavy equipment that we ordered over the last 2 years. A lot of them are coming in. And so that could change things a little bit. But nothing really stands out in terms of, I think, I don't, there's nothing really like anomalies or anything like that, other than, of course, the amount of capital equipment we're getting vis-a-vis last year. So let me just pull this up here. So here is, I'm gonna make it bigger. Give me a sec.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so we've received $49.5 million in revenues so far, and I think we'll get 74.25 in total. Bear in mind that that includes $1 million transfer from the general funds to support the construction of the bifusion building. I think we will have $1 million of expenditures on the building by June 30th, and I'll be able to transfer those funds. That's the plan anyway, but I feel like I think I'll know more once I dig into the forecast in the next couple of weeks. Again, talking about here's capital outlay. So we had a budget of $7 million. We've received $6.1 million so far, but I think it's going to be more like $11 million by the time we get to the end of the year. Again, that was analysis that was done back in January, and I'll dig into it again, and we'll see what the third quarter forecast looks like, but I think it's probably pretty close. And then our capital projects were under budget. We had $7.9 million for capital projects, and we'll probably be about 4.2. We've only spent $412,000 so far, but you know, when we get the bills from the Bifusion contractors, those will be coming soon. That's going to really tick up. So there, that leaves us again with the $39.8 million that we've spent. With our forecast, we had $74.4 million that we thought we would receive this year. We'll spend $70.2. That should leave us in the green at $4.2 million, meaning that we did not dip into our fund balance this fiscal year. And I think that that will be the case. So that's the extent of my news. And we have submitted the requested budget to the city manager. And I believe his recommended budget will go to mayor and council sometime in April. So we're in the process of, we just had sort of a preliminary meeting. And I know that Carlos has had discussions with the CMO since then. So what the recommended budget ends up as, I think will crystallize over the next month.
But since we're an enterprise fund, we shouldn't be so heavily impacted by the negative vote on 414 or any of the other problems.
Yeah, right.
In general, so in the general balance, general fund.
That's true, Margo. I will tell you, though, that city manager is interested in the cash balance in the fund, just that it's being managed and not, you know, depleted beyond the obligations that the fund has. So so those are, you know, it's not like, you know, we could ask for an irresponsible amount of expenditures for next year, not that Carlos would, but you know, things have to be within reason, and the city manager does review the fund balance and also the projections, how the fund balance will look from fiscal year 26 out for 5 years. We've done some estimates just to show them what the fund balance will look like projecting out. So they are interested in that. And that's everything. And if you, Kay, you had said that you wanted to talk about the budget and, or at least have a budget presentation so I can work with Carlos on when we can do that. And maybe that could be part of just our regular meeting once we have, you know, a gelled version, a sort of closer to, it's not going to be final, of course, until mayor and council approve it, but, if we got the recommended budget, and we can present that when the timing works for this meeting, if you didn't want to have a separate meeting.
Okay. What do you think, Margot? Is she here? She's off. Let's see her. Well, we'll talk about it. Thank you, Maggie. Yeah. Absolutely. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Great. Well, great to see everyone.
Yeah. And thank you for being so organized.
My pleasure. Thank I'd get me some hot water if I wasn't.
I know. All right. So where are we now? Okay. Trevor, do you have a waste diverging collection and education update for everyone?
Sure do. I'll go fairly quick. In waste diversion on our monthly MRF report, plastics 1, 2, and 5, those plastics that we're sending up to Las Vegas, the amount that we're receiving back on those went up from 440 a month to 562 a month per ton. And we're also going to see the residue surcharge come off of our bills starting in our next monthly report for February. So we did, in fact, stick to the 19% contamination rate, which is below the 19.3% where we get dinged. It seems like the reason that our contamination rate came down so much was the MRF added a new belt, an optical sorter for plastics. So hopefully we'll stay right around or maybe continue to be under that 19.3% for, we'll say permanently, hopefully. Public outreach, month of March is not too busy. April being Earth Month is very busy for Christine and her team. They're kicking off a new master recycling program. They have the zero waste collection event on April 5th. They're also doing Children's Museum Earth Day and Party for the Planet at the Zoo.
I like those are my favorite.
Yes. and doing a few other things related to websites and surveys. Collections was several very exciting updates. They're continuing to receive new trucks and are waiting for more in 2023 and 2024. The exciting update was as of about almost 2 weeks ago now, all radio services and communications went down. The vendor that City of Tucson was working with for providing those services went out of business, packed up, and didn't tell the City of Tucson any of that was going to happen. So as of last week, they had limited communications restored and were working diligently to try to figure out a permanent long-term solution to get all of that working again. On the landfill, the pad is getting updated. That's the general plan. They're planning to bring something to ESAC in the next 6 months once there's something more fleshed out there. Container maintenance is moving out to Los Reales for sure this time. That should be done by next week. And then the new Bifusion building is moving along smoothly, and they're working on running electric and water lines. And that's it.
Any questions? I think we got it. This has been a good day for reports, huh? Let's move on then to item 7, future agenda items.
I don't have any.
Anyone?
I did. I have one. I talked to Chris earlier about it. I'm just kind of curious about getting some updates on the Kinder Morgan problem we had from a couple years ago from the spill that they had. And then we have not. Yeah, that's pretty much about it, and making sure that we have the everything's going okay with monitoring the old landfills. Everything's going along as it should be. And then I had a question for I was wondering and this is regarding the Air Force Base. Do they have their own landfill, or do they use Los Reales, or what do they do with their their landfill needs. I was just kind of wondering if they actually do use the services at Los Reales.
Fred, I can answer that quickly if no one objects. We do provide service to Davis Montans, so our collection picks up all residents on base, and and then they, if there's any commercial waste or special disposal needs, they do dispose at Los Reales.
They do their own?
No, they do dispose at Los Reales.
Okay. Is that so also true with the airport and the Air Guard?
From what I know, we can follow up and add that, just because if there's any more in depth, we'll have to ask.
Okay,
sounds good. Thanks. Anyway, item 8, no call to the audience. And here we are, item 9, it's 5:21, and our meeting is adjourned. Don't fly away, it's windy out there.
That's started raining too.
Yeah.
Get your power back.
And it was my eucalyptus tree that shut up.
Really? Is your power back on? Me.
Oh yeah, they're all out there. That's why the dog's barking. So I'm in trouble. I got to go out there and keep them from butchering it. So see you later. Bye.
Good luck for that.
Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
I know.
Have a good night, everyone.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Where do I go to?